This Week in Wealth is powered by Alpha Wealth Group. If you're serious about retirement and have saved $250,000 or more, call Alpha Wealth Group's Tom Fortino now, 630-934-1855 or alphawealthgroup.com. Alpha Wealth Group, retirement made simple.
This episode of This Week in Wealth is sponsored by Alpha Wealth Group. Tom Fortino is an investment advisor representative of Retirement Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered advisor. WGN Radio and RWA are not affiliated. Here's WGN Radio's Elise Glink and Alpha Wealth Group's Tom Fortino.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to This Week in Wealth. I'm Elise Glink. I'm the CEO of Best Money Moves, my financial wellness company.
And I'm Tom Fortino, the founder and principal of the Alpha Wealth Group right here in Chicagoland.
If you want to talk with Tom or anybody in his group, ask a question for the show, give us a call, 630-934-1855, or you can go to alphawealthgroup.com. So it is tax day. We're finally here, Tom, that day, that magic day in April where everybody goes, ouch. Forbes has pointed out that the need for tax planning doesn't end, and really it is ending now. For unless you filed for an extension, everybody, your tax planning is over. File your paperwork tomorrow. But you know, Forbes is saying is just because you're no longer working, tax planning doesn't end. And I thought maybe today might be a good day to talk about what are some of the common tax mistakes you're seeing retirees make. Obviously, your clients aren't making these, but what is everybody else doing?
Well, I think the biggest mistake is not, you know, doing what I call more of tax planning or forward tax planning. There's a difference between tax preparation and tax planning. Look, I get it. You know, we have this rear view mentality with taxes. We do them once a year. We put them in, but, you know, we get them done, we file them, and we never look at them again the rest of the year. And that's unfortunate. And I get it. Look, but there's so much opportunity, you know, to take control as much as possible of our taxes to try to minimize taxes, right? I mean, there's the obvious ones, which is the Roth IRA, the Roth, you know, there's these tax-free strategies. Look, you know, we still have, whatever, 8 months left in the year, roughly 7 months or whatever it is, but you can fund your 401k throughout the rest of the year. Now, the question is, do you switch some of that to a Roth? Keep in mind, the Roth grows tax-free. Now, you pay today. It's pay on the seed, not on the harvest. But you don't get the tax deferral, but the money will grow tax-free the rest of your life. There's no required minimum distributions. It will not be used to determine how much of your Social Security is taxable. And it goes to your spouse and children tax-free. So maybe we want to start incorporating some of this in our plan. You could do that in addition to the Roth IRA. So that's just one move.
I mean, I think it's important to sort of think about taxes on a year-round basis, but nobody likes to do that. I mean, your point is, you know, most people in this country, now that we have such a huge standard deduction, you know, it's like all the itemization stuff has really fallen away, and only the top, I don't know what the number actually is going to be this year, the top 3%, top 7% of people are actually going to take deductions. You know, for everybody else, they're like, oh, I just get the standard deduction, so I don't know what there is to even think about. And, of course, we have the SALT issues, the state and local tax issue. That's a problem here. Right. But the assumptions that people make, I think, that were true probably 10 or 15 years ago, and that's what you've got ingrained in your head, are not true anymore. Like, for assuming that your taxes will be lower in retirement. That's something that I think was a truism 10, 12 years ago and maybe 40 years ago. But maybe not so much today, right?
That's a very true statement, Lisa. If you think about it, your pension is 100% taxable. Social Security, up to 85% of that is taxable. And every penny of your IRA and 401k is taxable at whatever the tax rate is in the future. So this is where, you know, Ed Slott used this term. I'll give some attribution to that. I think he said your retirement accounts are infested with taxes, which...
Oh, my gosh. Did he really say that? I really like Ed. So that's just it makes my skin crawl.
You know, and this is how we got to look at taxes. So my point is, what are we trying to do to minimize that? I mean, this is an extreme example, but okay, but you could get there. I mean, if all of your money was in Roth, all of your retirement accounts were in Roth accounts, and you and your let's say you and your spouse, for those of you who are married, you know, you may have 60,000, 70,000 of Social Security income, whatever that number is. But if you have that, one of you has 35, the other you has 30, both of you have 35,000, that's 70,000 of Social Security income. Do you know if all your money was in a Roth and you were subsidizing your income with the Roth, you would pay no taxes, ever. All of your Social Security would be tax-free. Your Roth would be completely tax-free because the Roth is not used to determine how much of your Social Security is taxable. You would pay no tax for the rest of your life based on today's tax code. Never.
Okay, but if you're already in the top tax bracket, I mean, that's really fabulous to be tax-free forever. And I do wish I had had more, you know, Roth exposure. Uh-huh. But what if you're in the top tax bracket now? Is it still worth taking that big a hit when you convert money into a Roth?
Well, you know, the top tax bracket, just like you were saying, small numbers. I mean, right now, the Tax Reform Act or the 2017 Tax Cut and Jobs Act is set to sunset through, you know, it's going to be here through 2025. So you basically have four tax years, 22, 23, 24, and 25, where these tax brackets are higher. You know, and again, not to minimize taxes, but if you're filing joint, you can have up to $340,000 of taxable income and still be in a 24% tax bracket. Now, there's a 22 below that and a 12. But my point is, you know, if there's opportunity to convert money today at a 22 or maybe even a 12% tax bracket, maybe we should be considering that. And you don't have, it's not an all or nothing proposition. Again, this is getting back to what are we doing to try to minimize, and I said forward tax planning, so we're putting ourselves in a better position down the road. And this is really why it's, you know, I always make tax planning, even though, you know, I'm an investment advisor rep, we do money management, active money management, but I incorporate tax planning in my clients' accounts. I want to know, first of all, what your taxable income is. What is your tax bracket? Do you know? You know, 12 and a 22? This is just, you know, this should be part of your plan. And
right.
I think it's overlooked.
Now, if you convert and you're paying that tax, does that also, though, add to your income? So if you were at the $300,000 level and you convert $100,000, does that push you to $400,000 and that just changes your tax bracket altogether?
Well, the Roth conversions, yes. It's always considered income. That's the thing with IRAs. Every penny, to your
right.
point, yes, it is pure income. So you, because the next tax bracket is 32. So you want to try to say, well, you know, let me, this is why we want to know these things. What are the tax brackets? Try to do it in systematically so I don't go into another tax bracket. Now, you know, now not all your income goes in that tax bracket. It's a blend of a 10, a 12, a 22, and a 24. I don't want people to think that now you're going to a 32, everything's taxed at 32. That's not the case. It's every dollar above 340. But to your point, Elise, you want to be aware of what your tax brackets are. I know this doesn't sound fun. Well, I hope it does because you're saving taxes.
It sounds so unfun that my skin is crawling. Like,
but it's not as complicated as it needs. Really, it does. And if it's explained properly, you say, I get it. Hey, I see that. I'm in a 22% tax bracket. If your income's under roughly $176,000, roughly, not to the penny, you're
right.
in a 22% tax bracket. So maybe you should be paying the 22 to go to a Roth.
630-934-1855, alphawealthgroup.com. Stay tuned because when we come back, we're going to change topics altogether and talk about the stock market. I'm Elise Glink. This is This Week in Wealth on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody, to This Week in Wealth. I'm Elise Glink, sitting here with Tom Fortino, and we are talking about your money in retirement, your money in the stock market, your money in taxes, all kinds of stuff today. If you want to talk to Tom, 630-934-1855 is the number, or you can go to alphawealthgroup.com. You can also leave a question for us, and if it's widely applicable, we will certainly talk about it on the show. So, Tom, each year there's this metric that compares the performance of the market to how all of this high-paid stock-picking fund managers did. And last year, 79% of all these people who make multi-million dollar paychecks failed to beat the S&P, the S&P 500. And over 10 years, 86% of them have underperformed the S&P 500. Bob Pisani, who I have known for 25 years, was asked, why can't Wall Street's best and brightest do better than just the index? And we've talked about this for a long time, but what are some of the lessons here, and what should our expectations of returns be for our working lives and in retirement, and does it even matter?
Well, what matters is that we benchmark, or we, just like anything in life, it's like, okay, it, you know, it's relative to something. You know, hey, I, you know, I'm getting paid $20 an hour. Well, wait a minute, the average pay out there in your field is 30. Maybe it's not so good. You know, so it's the same concept with the market. When you're looking at your investments and you say, hey, I'm up 20% this year. Well, the market was up 40, you know, or whatever. I'm up 10. So we want to understand, how do we measure performance? How do we understand what we're doing? So that's where, and a lot of times, you know, it's very common. Look, the S&P large cap has been, you know, U.S. large cap has been the place to be for the last 10 years. You're not going to outperform anyway, you know, whether it's international, small cap, mid cap, fixed, it's just not going to happen, right? 2008, if you were all in bonds, you would have been up for that year when the market was down 37. So we want to understand that. And I think it's a reaction. I say, well, the market's up 20%. Why am I not up that 20%? Well, because you're not in the S&P large cap, right? And you're not like, so again, understand, this gets back to when we talked about the fun stuff about taxes. It's true with investing. You know what you own. I think Peter Lynch, who by the way, I think beat the indexes every year for 10 years straight, the Fidelity fund manager. I think he had Magellan or Contra. I don't know if you recall.
I think he had Magellan.
You know, and that's very, as you, the statistics, that's very uncommon. But his saying was, know what you own and know why you own it. And so this is all part of, you know, talk to, if you're working with someone, say, hey, can you tell me, give me a breakdown of my investments? What am I in? What do I own? We've talked about target date funds as an example, because it's, you know, these 2030, 2040 funds, whatever it might be, default funds in 401ks. You may be surprised when you look at the growth piece of it. You know, a large portion, this is my opinion now, you know, 30-40% of it's in international. Are you aware of that? And do you want that? So we have to be careful and understand what we own.
I'm glad you brought up target date funds, because they are touted as the be-all, end-all. But I am suspect of them. And I'm suspect of them for a number of reasons. But one is that it's, you can determine your retirement date, right? So, you know, it's supposed to be, oh, when you're 67 or whatever your full, you know, you pick that year. Right. And you could pick a year 10 years later, and that would be the target date that you pick, or 20 years later, so you would have more exposure over time. But I think you pay a lot for what you get with target date funds, typically. And I don't know how they compare to a regular S&P 500, but I think I would rather not have somebody tell me that I need 30% in bonds and predetermine how that mix goes over time. I think I would want to have, I think I would rather own like an S&P 500 and then a total bond fund if I wanted to have a mix like that. And then I would select the mix. Does that make sense, or am I just thinking about it the wrong way? Am I overcomplicating something that has been, you know, brighter minds than mine have designed to be perfect?
You know, I think there is something to be said. I agree with what you're saying in the sense that, you know, we create these funds. I mean, look, the intent is fine, you know, want to help people out. But it also creates maybe this dependency. Okay, well, I'm in a 2030 fund. I must be okay. I'm going to retire in 2040 or 2035. I'll pick this fund. I'm okay. And so that's the concern that sometimes I have. It's like, okay, have you looked under the hood? Do you know what you own?
Right.
And so you start to see, oh, wait, I didn't know. What, 30% of it is in international? I didn't know that. You know, and so I do this when anyone comes into the office, when we do a portfolio analysis, that's one of the things. I sometimes call it a portfolio X-ray. Do you see what sectors you're in? Do you see what you own? What are your largest holdings? How much do you have in international? So this is really something, again, another call to action. This is, I want to, again, say this. It's not as complicated. I think if once you start down this path and you get engaged, it's really going to be fulfilling, I think, and empowering when you start to look at some of these things.
Do you find that your female women clients, if they're married, do you find that they're equal participants in looking into this? Or, you know, maybe if they're single women, because, you know, the odds are women are going to outlive men. So the husband dies and the wife is sort of left with this big pile. Do you find that they engage in this conversation as much, because really the studies show that women do better over the long run simply because they're less inclined to knee-jerk reaction stock picking. And, and less likely to go, oh, water cooler talk. I'm just going to plunk 20 grand into that one without doing any research whatsoever. So how are you finding, like, you know, your female clients and how they're dealing with this?
Well, it's interesting because I think more and more, you come across somewhere where someone will come and say, you know, my wife has just no desire, does not want to be involved, doesn't care. And so I always say, hey, bring them in and we'll go through this. And it's interesting when you do that and you go through it, they perk up and they, oh, I see what's going on. And it's nice to know because clarity always helps. You don't want uncertainty. And when one of the spouses is not involved, that's can be, you know, it can be problematic. So I always encourage that. But I think more and more I'm tending to see, you know, a lot of independent, either some women that do it on their own, they're part of it, or they're pretty involved. I'm seeing more and more of that. And it's, to me, it's nice. I like that. I mean, because you're all right. It's interesting, too. They're more responsible than men. It just, that's just the way it is in life.
Yeah. It's sort of, it's interesting. I'm not sure what, if it's the fear, you know, I think a lot of women, and I'll put myself in this category, you know, when I was younger, I was certain, you know, I was a freelance writer. I was like, I have no idea what my future holds. Like, financially, I felt like I was going to have money in my life, and I do now. But, you know, when I was 24, I was earning, I think, $14,000 a year. Like, and I still managed to find $2,000 to put away. Lesson number one, don't let a guy with a high cost upfront load invest your money in something when you tell him that, you know, I just relied on him to make the decision and it cost me 6%. I never made that mistake again. But, you know, when you're a woman, I think there's this sort of bag lady thing that you carry around in your head that you're going to be old and not have any money and live it out of a bag or something. And I think a lot of women are worried. And so they invest sometimes too cautiously, very conservatively, and they need some encouragement. But I'm glad that you're seeing this, you know, a younger generation that's coming of age, right? Younger Gen Zs are now starting to retire. Sorry, not Gen Zs. Younger baby boomers are starting to retire. And I'm the last year of the baby boom. I'm kind of July of 64, and 64 was the last year of the baby boom. I'm almost Gen X. So, you know, my generation is now starting to get to 60, and it's just, I think there's different lessons that we've learned along the way.
I agree completely, and I see that more than, and there are times where the wife is the one that's in total control, and that's not uncommon either. But it comes back to, you know, that's why men are kind of helpless. I mean, they just are, right? I don't, whether it's your health, it's, they,
you're
going to
get
without,
so many
without,
calls about this now.
I mean, they'll readily admit it. I saw something on 12 signs you're a man or whatever. One of them, you're helpless without your wife. You know, you don't know where it's like, okay, you don't know what you're doing next day. Okay, when are my appointments? What am I supposed to do? It's kind of like that. So, yes, women are more responsible, I think, you know, as a general comment, because, and that's a good thing.
If you're going to live like, you know, I think the average is 6 to 8 years longer, you know, and you're going to, women are far more likely to live on their own in retirement than men are. I think it's super important. And what we really want is to have people be as active as possible.
I agree. So, I think there's a misconception. This stuff, that's why, and unfortunately, it prevents people. I think to a certain extent, there's a hesitancy. It's not that complicated. Just get engaged, look at it, and it's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, it really does. Well, you can reach Tom 630-934-1855 or go to alphawealthgroup.com. You can leave us a question. We'll be talking about those on air. Don't forget to pay your taxes tomorrow. And we're very happy that you are with us and talk to us each week while we talk to each other. Anyway, thanks again. We're out of time, as usual. It just flies by when we're talking, Tom. But I'll see you back here next week. And thanks so much for listening to This Week in Wealth on 720 WGN.
Tom Fortino is an investment advisor representative of Retirement Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered advisor. Alpha Wealth Group, WGN, and RWA are not affiliated. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell any financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals specialized in fields of tax, legal, accounting, or investments regarding the applicability of this information for their situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Investments will fluctuate, and when redeemed, may be worth more or less than when originally invested. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products. They do not refer in any way to securities or investment advisory products. Fixed insurance and annuity product guarantees are subject to the claims paying ability of the issuing company and are not offered by Retirement Wealth Advisors. Insurance and annuities offered through Alpha Wealth Group, licensed in Illinois.